Welcome to the Children's Book Author Podcast. I'm your host, Eleanor Page. If you write for children, or it's always been your dream to, you're in the right place. As the Children's Book Author, I'm on a quest to discover everything there is about writing, publishing, and marketing children's books, as well as how to supercharge my creativity, skyrocket my productivity, and absolutely everything else there is to know about how to be the best, so you can be too. Join me as I interview fabulous guests and become the children's book author. Welcome back to the Children's Book Author Podcast. It is me, Eleanor, again. Who else would it be? After all, I am the host. And today I am talking to Christina Dankert, who is a children's book author, all about the importance of having a writing group. So love this topic, and it's a topic that I'm definitely interested in. I've been in writers' groups before. Particularly for me, I've been in writers' groups where we talk a lot about marketing or kind of critiquing our covers or giving each other suggestions or sorting out the endless array of problems with Ingram Spark, you know, little things like that, which has been invaluable over the years. I've probably, to be honest, learned most of my marketing things through being in those kind of writers groups. I also have a group. We haven't had a session in a really long time now, but there's three of us and we get together on Zoom and talk through how we're going, what we're at, what struggles or challenges we're having, what things we're focusing on at the moment. And Christina's had that as well. But hers goes a little bit further. Well, a few things. You'll hear all about it, of course, so I don't want to spoil all of what she says. They do give feedback on each other's manuscripts. They actually read each other's manuscripts. And this is something that I think I've really longed for, to have a group of people where you really trust them and you're willing to have them read your stuff and you read their stuff. And oh my gosh, that would be amazing. So, you know, I want to put the call out to the universe, to the skies and heavens above, perhaps just to the listeners. Maybe that's an even better place to start and say, hey, I don't know. I wouldn't know how to go about it. I mean, you know, how do you collect a group of writers that you trust and know and feel that you're sort of at, I don't want to say same level, because what level are you at, but the same kind of mindset maybe? It's tricky. But anyways, that's definitely something that I would love to start, make, create, perhaps be the instigator of, perhaps hunt for one that's already working like clockwork that I could join. I'm just sort of putting it out there. That's definitely what I took away from having this interview with Christina. But we talk about lots of different things to do with publishing and writing. I know you're going to get amazing value out of it. And that's my intro for her. On a different level, one of the things that I did recently, and I may have talked about it before, is I took the Spark Type test, and I encourage you to go and Google Spark Type test, just the way that it sounds. It's a framework that helps you understand yourself better so that you actually understand the energy at work and in life and the things that lift you up, make you happy. Long story short, I did the test years ago and came out a maven maker, I think. So I love to learn and I love to make. That felt great, but I always felt like something was missing from that formula. And then recently I realized that I actually bought the book by Jonathan Fields, the creator of Spark Type, and it's called Sparked: Discover Your Unique Imprint for Work That Makes You Come Alive. And I was flicking through the book and reading the different archetypes in there. And then I read The Sage. And The Sage loves to lift people up and to teach, but not just teach. It's kind of like to inspire and change people and help them to grow. And I thought, oh, I think I'm that too. So I took the test again and answered leaning towards that, I suppose. And I came out a maker sage. this time around, the sage type, which is the one I just described for you. So I've reached the analysis. Like all good things in life, there needs to be three types, not two, the way it gave me. I'm going to now call myself a maven maker sage. And why am I telling you this? Like, what is the relevance of doing this? Well, to be honest, for me, it gave me a framework that I think I've been lacking a bit up until now. You know, like I can say, oh, I'm going to start a podcast and I'm going to write a book and I'm going to draw this and I'm going to make that and I'm going to learn this. Having the three types come together in that way kind of showed me what I've been aiming to do but haven't really had a structure to. So for me, it's kind of like I love to learn and make, but ultimately with the need to inspire, whether that is inspiring people through the reading of my books, the children that read my books and grow and get inspired and feel a bit lighter or brighter, but also from having this podcast, for example, and helping other authors like you find your way so that you can actually feel like it's an enjoyable thing to do, not like, my goodness, this is the most painful thing I've ever done. What was I thinking wanting to become an author? No, no, no. It's about making it fun and inspiring and wonderful and ideally succeeding in it, even if that success is your own happiness. But anyways, go and do the Spark type test. Let's see what you come out as and if you find it helpful as well. Also, I have been doing the 40-day creative challenge. That's what I called it. I started it 10 days ago now. Actually, today's day 11 that I'm recording this intro, and it's been life-changing. So you can see me doing the challenge on Instagram if you don't already follow me at Eleanor Page Books. I encourage you to try it. I put some rules in place for myself, like I'm not allowed to edit or complain or whine or review things too much or, gosh, I can't remember what else now. Basically, I just have to be creative. It's about the output of creativity. And I have journaled a couple of times. Yes, I did break the rules. I even edited once and I broke the rules. But breaking the rules taught me about how I should really not break the rules because on those days, I didn't really create as much. It's been fantastic. Look, I've finished writing The Magician's Academy, and now I've gone back to writing The Farron Chronicles, which is the series that houses The Splendid Secrets of 66 Lily Pilly Lane. Yes, it is a mouthful. And now I have begun to write The Curious Creatures of 77 Sycamore Street. And I'm using this new process that I've not used before and made it part of my 40-day creative challenge. And the rule is kind of like I've just got to write it forward. Like I have no plan. I have no idea of anything. I do want to go back and like fix things or add things or change things. So I might like make a note in my notebook if there's something that I notice, oh gosh, I'd really want to go back and add that or change this. But other than that, I read what I wrote yesterday, but I'm not allowed to change or edit anything. I just read it to kind of get where the story's going, and then I write it forward. I continue to write forward. I do have beside me a bit of a shell of kind of the structure of a good story, so I'm sort of checking in. What stage am I at? Is this kind of what's supposed to be happening? But only very, very loosely. And I've got to tell you, so far, it's actually working miraculously. It's showing me that, hey, my intuition got this, baby. And look, I'm sure I read over the story at the very end and be like, what is this? But that doesn't matter because I have the shell in place. And rather than sitting there for days on end contemplating the next part of my story, it's forcing my creativity forward. I reckon after I finish this entire process on this book, I might make a little mini course and share it with anybody who might be interested because I think I'm onto something. Maybe it's been done before and I think I've invented it. Who knows? But I think I'm onto something. So let's see how it goes. I am actually halfway through the book. Yep. Halfway through. I'm probably keeping in mind, I'll probably add words when I fix things because it's very sort of Shelley writing. Like there could be a bit more dialogue and things that will be added. But I'm halfway through the book. I'm at about 23,000 words and I'm aiming for 50 because it's a middle grade novel. And I've done that in, well, actually, I got to confess, I've actually done that in, I think it was something like 9 days because I took a couple of days off. Yeah, that's what I've done just from doing the 40-day creative challenge. I've also been painting trees because I used to paint trees a long time ago when I was a therapist. They're kind of therapy trees, I suppose. They're magical and I kind of, again, just do them very intuitively but with the intent that they heal and shift or remind you of something important. Hey, if you want to go see the crazy acrylic painted trees with lots of glitter, a little bit of crystals, you can find them at Magical Tree Art on Instagram as well. And that's really what I've been up to and why I haven't posted a podcast in a little while. But I knew this one had to go out soon because I've got a few that are still to go and the people who are interviewed are getting cross at me. When is my interview going live? I know. It will eventually become live. So enjoy today's episode. I hope that you've been incredibly creative, super inspired from not just this podcast, but from anything else that you've been doing in life at the moment. It's such a wonderful time of year to get more creative than usual. I always find this time of year kind of magical, whether you're in the northern or the southern hemisphere, doesn't matter. It is a magical creative time of year. So go out there, create, and enjoy today's episode. Welcome back to the Children's Book Author Podcast with me, your host, Eleanor Page. And normally I do introduce my guests with lots of specials, but I've had to reflect on this. I'm getting a bit sick of specials. Plus, people are starting to fight over how many specials I give them. So I'm going to go for a whole different adjective today. I have the marvelous Christina Dankert, who is a children's book author, an elementary educator, and a literacy enthusiast. And I don't know how I remembered all that, Christina, but I did. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Eleanor.
Tell me a little bit about your journey. How did you get here?
Well, when I was learning to be a teacher, we had this beautiful library that I would spend all sorts of time at on the second floor. That was the children's area. And I could go right back to where I was standing. And I thought, I want to write a children's book someday. And I want it to be in this library. And that was about 15, 16 years ago, because life happens. And I got married and my husband by day is an artist. And by day, I'm an educator. I teach second grade. And it was during the global shutdown. I had stepped away from the classroom for a year. And in the times that I would be grading papers and lesson planning, I was writing and I was learning about the publishing process. And together, my husband and I were able to check this bucket list item off by coming together and producing a picture book.
Was that sort of a scary, difficult process? From that moment of, like you said, 15 years ago, wow, I'd love to do this, to the time is now, was it a lot to learn? Was it a steep learning curve? Was it an easy learning curve? How did you find that?
The misconception is that you just write the book, and writing is a piece. And I was fortunate enough to reach out to a local children's librarian who gave me 3 different books on the publishing process because that is a totally different world. I would say it's not only steep, but it is something where you're constantly learning as an author. You are learning from other people. You're learning from the publisher. You're learning by attending conferences, by listening to webinars and attending things. There's just so much to drink in. So I think, yes, it was very steep. You kind of have to take it in baby steps. If it's something that you're thinking, I have a story that I want to share, there's a lot of perseverance that goes in with this process.
Had you been sitting on the what you were going to write part of that for all those years, or did you say to yourself, what am I going to write about? How did that come about?
I was definitely sitting on it. We need more hours in a day to do all the things that teachers and moms and writers want to do. I don't exactly remember what I was doing, but about 5 years ago, the idea of the kindness machine popped into my head. And I remember that weekend I went out and I bought a little notebook and I put that title in. And for a long time, it was just the title that lived there. And then an idea would come, or a character, or a point that I wanted to put in the story. So it kind of just kept little bits and pieces, but it wasn't until I had that concentrated time where I, you know, stepped away as an educator and I was able to focus on my family. And then I was able to really, really sit down and say, come on, this is the time. You're given this opportunity. And so it just kind of slowly then came when I had the time to concentrate on it.
I love that you said that, because I think that's actually a really critical point, that you almost collected the little bits of the ingredients. I've taken this a little bit from your book, which we'll talk a bit about in a minute, where, you know, at the end where there's the chef. It wasn't until you actually make yourself sit down and put those pieces together and maybe let some of the pieces go. You have to actually sit to do it. You cannot just have it there floating around forever. Would you agree?
I would. And, you know, going back to reaching out to the librarian, he said, read everything that you can that's already out in your genre. Okay, well, you have children's, and then you bring it down to character strengths, and then you bring it down to kindness. And so I think I read like 50 or 60 other books that had some kindness idea. And you're learning about the market. You are seeing what's already out there, and then you're seeing what's missing so that you can add that in. So I think to continue to learn from other published things, that's so helpful too. You know, you need your ideas, those creative ideas come, you know, when you're in the shower, when you're driving your car, and then you can write them down. But then to sit down and really focus on whatever your craft is, and knowing it's going to keep getting better, hopefully.
The other thing that really jumped at me just then that you said is you didn't say, because no one had ever written a kindness book and I thought the world needed one. I mean, now that sort of might be true. I don't know. Like maybe no one wrote a specific kindness book, but you went and read everything else that was kind of similar. So there are other things. And I think a lot of people miss that. You can be original and you ought to be original, but you still want the principle of resonance. It's got to resonate to things that have come before, fit in somewhere, kind of have a place. A lot of people kind of, you know, write their thing and say, this has never been done before, ever, ever. And then a lot of people don't want to read that, right? Because it's so out there, maybe it's just a bit ahead of its time. So that you read everything to find your place in there. No other guest has said that so far. That's why I'm jumping on that, because that is really super important.
Well, and I think too, you know, a lot of times in the publishing or in the author journey, when I was researching publishers, a lot of them ask you as part of your submission, give me three other comp titles. What are other things that are comparable to this? Because it has to fit somewhere. So I think, you know, for this, for the kindness machine, I would love to tell you that one book will change the world and it's magical and there's a magic wand in there and some fairy dust, but it's not. And I think too, as an educator and as a parent, teacher, caregiver, you select so many books and you're hoping by reading all of these books and continuing to talk about whatever the concept is, kindness or empathy or compassion, whatever it is, that it's because of all the books and all the conversations that you're continuing to instill these really important values.
Such wise words. Well, your book, The Kindness Machine, I was just saying before we got on air that I helped my sister to move over the weekend and she said, oh, do you want any of this stuff? And I looked over and I saw this. I thought, this is a sign, because I'm about to talk to the kindest person. I hope you can see that. Throw kindness around like confetti. And it's just going to remind me of you forever now. Why kindness? As you say, you're in there with the kids. So you see them in action. What made you go, kindness is actually important? Or was it anything to do with the kids? Maybe you were watching the news.
Well, you know, what's funny about that is, you know, I have two children and, you know, classroom of kiddos. And there's so many things that we want our children and our students to be. So many goals and aspirations that we have for them. But really, when they leave the house or when they leave the four walls of the classroom, you want them to be kind. And this idea of kindness to others, I think we are pretty good at reminding kids, you know, share with your sister and go take this to the neighbor, write your thank you note. But then also this idea of kindness to ourselves. And that was something that was so important for me to put in the book, because when I did some of that research, only one other book mentioned to be kind to yourself. So I think the magic of picture books is that, yes, they are for children. But as a children's author, you have two target audiences. You have the kids and you have the parents, teachers, caregivers, the grown-up. And I was really hoping that as they're reading this story, that when that idea of self-love and self-kindness comes up, it's also a reminder to us, because we don't hear it enough and we are not super great at it as adults. So I'm hoping that that little reminder, you know, can be for kids and adults.
I actually wrote that down on my little card, how to be kind to others as well as kind to ourselves. And you're right. I don't see that anywhere. And I think as a creative person, I don't know if you agree, oh gosh, we're so not kind to ourselves. Now, I'm sure everyone does that in every profession, but having been a psychologist before being what I am now, I think, you know, we're sort of trained to be kind to ourselves, but creatives aren't. It's almost like when I switched into being a creative, my brain switched and turned really mean. What is that? Does that come with the territory? Like, why do we do that?
And I think, too, that imposter syndrome is real. We are our worst critics. And yes, we want to make sure we're working on things and we're making it better and we're polishing. But I mean, I know I had days that were very hard in the waiting game. You know, where you're waiting to hear something about a manuscript or you're waiting to hear from an editor. And there were days I'm like, should I just delete the whole thing and start over? It was like, now, wait a second. Let's take a step back, look at it again after a few days. And then again, I think that mindset of how can I make it better? What can I keep doing to move forward?
Yeah, it's really, really important. So as a teacher, do you see the children be kind of mean to themselves a lot as well? Do you see that in action or not at that age? When does it kick in?
Yeah, so I teach second grade, so they're 7 or 8. It depends, because one of the rules in the classroom that we have is you can't say it's easy, because for some people it's not easy. And then you also say, I can't. I love that growth mindset idea of I can't yet. By throwing that yet on the end, we'll get there. And I think the magic is when a teacher is able to make a mistake in front of their class, because we all do it, or when you're able to point out something that was hard for you, it humanizes you. And then it lets kids kind of relax of, oh, it's okay if I make a mistake. So I think it depends on the child. And I think it depends on the activity. You know, whether we're starting something new in math that's tough for some kids, or I'm asking you to write more in your story. It just depends on the activity. I don't know if they're necessarily outwardly unkind, but you see it all over their faces and the way their eyebrows are going, that it's just tough. And so then what can you do about it to facilitate? It's okay, you can't do it yet. I love that.
I love that. And to me, it sounds like, you know, not only have you written this amazing book where you're encouraging kids to be kinder to others and to themselves, but you're doing it every day in your classroom. That is so beautiful. I love some of those things that you do in there. Amazing. So you worked on the book alongside your husband, right?
Yes, yes.
Is it Chad? Did I remember correctly? Chad Dankert. Excellent. So what was that process like? Like, did you want to kill each other? Did he listen to you? Did he do what you asked him? Did you let him go free? What happened? What is it like working like that?
I love that question. And you're not the first to ask. People are, even our good friends are like, so what was that like? I love it because I can say I'm creative, but I don't have the creative outlet of getting it from my brain to picture form. And so when I wrote the story, we had the opportunity to submit 2 sample illustrations. And I thought, okay, well, if this book is called The Kindness Machine, if I was a publisher, I would want to see that machine. And so Chad said, well, what does it look like? Like, I don't know. Like, I didn't have anything. So he said, okay, give me some time. So he did all of his sketching and he showed me, he's like this. And I'm like, oh my gosh, yes. So I think there was some magic in us being married for over a decade, being able to sit on the couch at night when the kids went to bed and to go back and forth together with a spread where I could say, hey, you know, like as a family, we built a free little library in front of the school where I teach at. Can you just sketch one of those in there? Or, you know, the teacher, he looks like my best friend. Can you just make him look like him? So I think there were some of those like little hidden gems for us that were so fun. And it was seemed to be relaxed because it was conversation on the couch. I wasn't waiting for an email. You know, I wasn't going back and forth with an illustrator that I've never met. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It just was a really fun process for us to do together.
Sounds so good. Was he one of those illustrators that takes forever, or did he do it quickly? Sorry, illustrators out there. You took my blow this episode. Someone has to take my blow every episode.
No, he was great. And once we had those 2 samples, we were able to submit the manuscript and the samples. And then it was very interesting to see that process unfold of let's have it edited a few more times and then start laying it out. And so he kind of worked with not only myself, but with the book formatter. And we are trying to get everything laid out the right way. And it was pretty smooth. I do say like the hardest part, I think, about writing a book is the waiting game. You're waiting for someone, like I said. But in this case, this seemed good. The pacing for him, that seemed really good.
That's awesome. All right. If he's out there as an illustrator, people, go hunt him down and hire him. Of course, he won't be sitting on the couch at you.
That's right. That's right.
But nonetheless, I'm sure he listens very carefully because the books come out beautifully. And so tell me, did it end up, did you self-publish? Did it get traditionally published? Which route did it go? Or route? Which way do we say that word?
We were right in between those two. We ended up going hybrid. So I would love someday to do self-publishing. I would love to be traditionally published, but we started kind of in the middle where we worked with the publisher. And the thing with traditionally published is that a lot of times these bigger publishing houses, they have illustrators that are in-house, and that's awesome. And they're so skilled and they're so talented. And I hope someday to be traditionally published. But in this case, we had a little bit more freedom and flexibility that allowed us to work together, where sometimes there were, you know, submissions that said, don't you dare send us an illustration. We don't want to see it. And so I think for this very first story, I'm so proud to stand. This is like the platform of kindness, and to be able to do it together, that hybrid allowed us a little bit more help than we would have had if we did it self-publishing. Because there's so much to learn. It was the right fit for us. And I think that's the thing you have to decide as a writer. What are your strengths? What do you need help with? And then when you're looking for those publishers, who do you align with? You know, the publisher that we went with was Purple Butterfly Press, and they have a lot of other books out that are hope, kindness, compassion, inclusion. So I think that made it a good fit because that's what they're already producing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And again, really wise, because there is not just one way, is there? And it has to suit. And I love the way you said, you know, it has to suit this book, this project at this time. That might change with every single project. You could have like, I mean, we live in such great times where we have the choice. Now, we don't have the choice to be traditionally published, it's true, but we can persist until we get traditionally published. It's probably just, like you said, a longer waiting game.
Sure. And I think too, you know, there are pros and cons to all 3 avenues. And I like, if you peel it back of what's my timeline look like? What's my want for this? Everything has its pro and its con. And for us, this was the right fit.
So in terms of marketing, what do you now do as part of that process and how far into it? So how long has the book been out? I suppose I haven't asked that.
Well, the book birthday is March 22nd. So we are just about there. It's wild because I went to school for education and I did not earn a marketing degree. I didn't know anything about marketing. However, I am so fortunate to have an awesome group of other writers. And it is through those discussions and to watch other people on social media and be like, oh my gosh, that's a great idea. You know, like you said, we all want to have these brand new ideas, but really you're taking bits and pieces and applying it to whatever it is. So I love the Instagram world. I think there's a great kid-lit community. Like I said, I truly believe, you know, when you think of a writer, you think of like someone holed up in a cabin or sitting by themselves in a coffee shop. And yes, writing is, you know, a solitary act. But it, just today, I sent one of my hopefully next manuscripts off to five of the ladies that are in my writing group. And I said, shred it, you know, give me that feedback now. How can I make it better? Because you get stuck. And so I think the marketing piece, I don't love it. I'm not going to lie, but it's necessary. And these social media platforms allow authors to be front and center if they choose. And so I think by having that encouragement from other writers and other authors, and then seeing what other people are doing, that has been so super helpful in a very unknown territory for me.
And you also said the magic words, though you may not have realized. You said your next manuscript, and one of the best ways to market yourself is to write the next book. I always have this sort of saying when I think, I'm going to do this thing. My brain always double checks myself and says, are you going to keep doing that thing? You don't make one thing and go, well, you can make one thing. That's a lie. You can make one thing, but people want the new thing and the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And well, that's what you find. Like course makers have like often multiple courses. Podcast people have multiple episodes, probably more than I should, because I'm very lazy at putting them out on time. But you see what I'm trying to say. You have to commit to doing that. So, you know, it isn't just, wow, I'm an author. I have one book. Yes, that's fine. You can do that. But you're writing the next book. And that's actually the commitment back to yourself in marketing in some ways more than anything else you can do.
For sure. And I think, too, somebody had said, once you have pressed that submit and it is off into the world, start working on the next thing. Whether it's a submission for a magazine, whether it's a blog, whatever it is, because you're becoming a better writer through that practice. Yeah, it's great. And I do hope I have, like I said, standing on this platform of kindness, I hope that I can have other books that fall into those different character traits and strengths that we have. I have to tell you, because you'll love it, I do have a little story I'm working on about a little Greek girl based on my life.
Yay, because yeah, we were talking off air that we're both Greek. There you are. Though I often get called Greek American on my reviews. This author must be Greek American. And I'm like, nope, Greek Australian, but you're Greek American, which is amazing.
Yes. So I think it's fun to then figure out what the journey is for the next set of characters. Whether, you know, it can be a series, but then you might just create brand new characters and it's kind of fun to see where they go.
And then underneath that, so kind of like your brand, the brand of Christina is, even though, yes, it's fiction and, well, The Kindness Machine was really fun and exciting, had a lot of magic and wonderful things happen, but there was that underlying message. So that's kind of your brand, to put those really strong values in there. Is that the aim?
For sure. And I think, too, part of that is having the educator background. We have been taught to very explicitly and mindfully pick books for your classroom. You know, what are you going to read and why? There is absolutely space for fantasy and fiction and talking animals and things. However, you know, when I'm trying to do so many things in my hours that I have with my kiddos, is figuring out what books can I grab to then have a conversation. You know, in the Kindness Machine, there were questions, guided questions before, during, and after reading. But there's also, Chad, my husband, did such a good job putting these little, we call magic questions, in the corner. Even the littlest listener, I've had parents tell me that their three-year-old could say, you know, what's a compliment you can give someone? And they're like, oh, I know, I know. But what's happening is they're taking themselves from the story that they're enjoying, and then they have a minute to apply it to, this is what it means to me. And then you're doing this crossover from text to real world. And you jump back into the book, and then you take it out, and you hope that that's what they carry on past when that book is closed.
Yeah, I love those little bits in the corner. They were so cute. I was listening to you read it, and I would pause the video and turn to my 15-year-old. Yes, I know she's very old. But, you know, old kids love picture books too. She was listening, and I asked her the question. She would answer back, and I'm like, this works for children of all ages. There you are.
I love it. I love it.
Thinking out loud here, and yes, if this is all, everything I say is completely wrong, please do send in emails. Maybe not. Don't send in emails. I won't invite that. But, you know, I'm trying to sort of figure this, you know, publishing and writing thing out, which is why I have this podcast. So, you know, even though, yes, I've written, you could say, a lot of books, but it's never really about how many you've written or what you've written, or even if I had, which I don't, but let's imagine I had one, you know, outstanding success like, you know, J.K. Rowling did, whatever. We still have to think about the next thing we're doing, and it's a really big, confusing publishing, writing world. The reason I'm saying all this is what I've noticed, and this is just an observation, is when I've interviewed people from so far, Britain or Australia, and I am Australian, so if I'm having a dig at Australians, I'm allowed because I'm Australian, but the advice often comes through, don't put a lesson in, or if you do, you shouldn't be able to see it. It should be really, you know, like hidden. It should just be funny and fun. But then when I talk to American guests, and I know a lot of writers of books written by American authors, that like the lessons are right there, and those books, they sell like crazy online. And I'm like, hold on. And so, and again, I'm just thinking out loud, and I'd love to see, you know, hear your opinion on it, Christina, is different things maybe sell online, different things sell differently in different countries, different things sell in the bookstore. Is this what's happening? Is this why I'm getting all this different advice? What's your take?
I definitely have a very clear message in mind, and it is, the purpose was more of a teaching tool. Now, with that in mind, you know, there's a huge concept in Kidlit that is show, don't tell. Just show us, don't tell us. I did telling, and that is just something that was part of the story. For future, I am definitely keeping in mind something like show, don't tell, because I want to see, can those messages get across with fewer words, with less telling? You know, you still want to have that message, but back it off. So I don't know. I think it might depend on the audience. You know, as a teacher, this book takes place in a classroom. So I love that. So it could be the local, you know, the setting of the story. As far as globally and the markets, I have heard that before, where, you know, certain countries are scooping up certain genres or certain types of writing more. I don't know why, but that just seems to be what's happening.
It's really interesting to me because it kind of just reminds me that, like, learn the rules, but then break them, you know, like
go out
if you get a gut instinct about something, and break that rule if you want to, if it suits, like you said, that certain book or that certain project. And it's really my key of this week, for some reason, my little word that's been coming up is judgment, because someone who sees that differently might say to you, you don't write a book like that. And you go, yeah, like maybe, but I chose to write this book like that. And it's kind of holding that stance, because I want to say it. I do. You know what? Those books sometimes that have the message in your face, they sell, because I go look in the numbers. They do. They do. Like, yes, there's no doubt kids love the ones that are just really fun and the message is hidden. But sometimes you need that one that's like says it as it is. I just felt I could have that discussion with you. And I had to have it with someone that I felt safe to have the discussion
with.
Perfect.
So
thank you, Christina.
Yes, yes. Well, and I think too, you know, the importance of beta readers and having other people, not your family and your friends, read it. You know, when I wrote this first version, it was fantasy. They jumped into a painting and there was this machine. And I had a friend say, "What's the deal with the magic?" And I'm like, kids love magic. And she said, "Yeah, but if you're trying to get this point of kindness across, you don't want a child to think it has to be something with magic in order for them to be kind." And I was like, oh my gosh. So I actually rewrote the manuscript and I shockingly didn't have to change much to take it out of fantasy into realistic fiction. But I think having those honest conversations with people that want you to be successful and are willing to give you that feedback, you know, you kind of build your tough skin as an author. You understand not everybody's going to like what you've put out, but this is how I wanted to do it. This is the best that I could with the feedback I had, and then keep going forward.
Beautiful. Really well said. Well, how do you find people like that? Like, I heard you say community group or group that you sent the manuscript to, and I'm like, hold on, hold on. Where did you get one of those? Did you? I want one of those. Where did you get one of those?
What happened is, again, I'm going back to the beginning with the librarian. He gave me this advice.
This is the magic librarian. We want one of these.
He said, find a writing group. Now, this was 2020, and I thought the whole world is shut down. What writing group are you talking about? So there were months of that solitary writing and that imposter syndrome. And then by following another publisher who I just subscribed to their newsletter, they said, you know, if you are interested in writing, attend this conference. And it was a writing conference for women. And because it was global, we had all learned how to do Zoom. And the entire conference was done through Zoom. You know, I teach second grade. I had never heard of the word Zoom before. And so we all came together. And then we clicked with this. It was the last group. Obviously, you're attending the sessions, but then you had these breakout rooms. And we just clicked. And we've been together now for 2 years. And this group kind of keeps exploding, and we meet virtually still. We're in the US and Canada a couple times a month, and it is the time to share your wins, the time to say, I'm really frustrated about this. What's your advice? But then we also turn the cameras off, turn the mics off, and you just sit and write. So that accountability that you can attend all the sessions you want, you can read all the books and listen to all the podcasts, but until you are doing the work, it's not going to get better. It's not going to magically happen. So I think finding that critique group, whether it's in person or online, just to hold you accountable is so important.
Yeah, that's amazing. How often do you meet in that way?
I'm usually able to attend 2 or 3 times a month. However, we have other sessions. You know, as a mom, the weekday ones are tough for me. But a Saturday morning with my coffee, that's right up my alley. So yeah.
And then you can also send each other what you're writing to get some feedback.
That's the beauty. So you have this connection, and it started with a very small Facebook group of 5 of us, and it has, you know, 75 people now. That not everybody's super active, but you come when you can. And that's an understanding that there's no judgment. We are here to support you. And then if you have a marketing question or you have a blog question or something, you pop it in this Facebook group, someone's going to have some advice that they can give you.
That's amazing. Yeah, I've always been a bit scared of groups, which sounds insane, because I'm, you know, very bubbly and social and crazy, just like I am online in person. So it's not like I'm not an introvert, so that's not the problem. But maybe I'm protective of what I write. Maybe I'm like, I don't want you to read that. Well, how do you know? Or I'm scared of being hurt. I don't know. Like,
it's hard. But I think, too, if you have the right people, they're not I think critique is, it just sounds like a rough word, you know, where it's like, oh, I don't want to be critiqued. Like that, just the word sounds weird. But I think when that you change it to feedback, like when I reached out to the ladies, I titled the email feedback favor, because that sounds nicer than critique. And I know though, they're going to give me feedback that's going to make it better, because they have been on the journey with me and they don't want you to fail. They want you to be successful. So I think that's the thing, is finding those people that you understand, okay, they might not like something, but they're telling you that with knowledge that they have, and then you take it or leave it, you know, but it is daunting, you know, sending your work out. Oh, it's tough.
It's amazing to me too, that you like, essentially you met these people online. Have you met any of them in person?
I've met one of the ladies in person. She actually came to my classroom to read her brand new picture book. And then several ladies around the country have been able to meet up. And that it's very special. I hope to meet many more. But it is. And I think just finding those people, like I said, you have to do what works for you. If it is that coffee shop meetup, fantastic. Or meet at the library, great. But in this case, this works for the busy schedules and the crazy different locations and time zones.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you actually, like you said, you actually write together so that you're all. Now, I love that you said you turned your cameras off, because I was invited into a group that said you had to keep your camera on. I thought, oh, knowing my luck, I'm literally going to be like the nose picker, you know, like 100%. And someone's going to look up right at that minute on that phone. And I'm like, oh, my God. I'm actually on video.
Yes, no, cameras are off. Cameras are on when we do the intro to share, and you do build that camaraderie. You do learn each other's work. And I think one of my favorite things in our group is when someone finishes a book, because we don't just have children's authors. We have people that are writing memoir and romance and mystery and everything. And when someone finishes someone else's book and they share their thoughts, like, I'm so proud of you. You know, I just finished one of the women. It was a trilogy. I'm like, oh my gosh, every single one got better. It's such a safe place to do it and to support each other. And then someone else said, well, oh, I'm going to get that book and I'm going to write that review. And all of those things that are, you keep it, you going on days when the writing is tough, or the days where you get that rejection, or the days where you just feel like you have nothing creative flowing. So that's been very, very special.
So it's like a book club for writers.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Yes. Yes.
There should be that's the Hollywood. Make that the next movie, please. That's what we'd like to see.
I'll watch that.
Yeah, you can go, you can write the story for them because you're living it.
I'll see what I can do.
Put that on your one day list. What sort of time commitment do you have to give to read other people's books? And has there been scenarios where someone hasn't, even though they said, for example, that they would?
Again, I think it's going to depend on the group. There's no set, anyone has to do it. And so I think, you know, when I'm listening to someone and they tell me that their story, the trilogy was wonderful, was wine, friendship, I'm like, yeah, I want to read that. That sounds good. So you find those things that you are interested in, and then you share it with other people that are not in the writing circle. You know, I tell my mom or I tell my friends, like, this was such a good book, because as authors, you are really counting on that word of mouth to help you with your marketing. You know, those reviews are great. The blogs are great, but it is someone else saying, you have to read this book. This book is so good. I'm just going to buy it for you and I'm just going to give it to you because it's so good. Those things have really helped. You asked, you know, has anybody ever not done it? I think because it's a larger group, that you're not saying, well, I'm waiting for Elena. What is taking her so long? You know, and then understanding, I had somebody ask my opinion and it was a very busy few weeks. And I said, I'm so sorry. I have not forgotten about you. I'll get to it. But again, you have this rapport. There's this trust of, I know you're going to get it. You know, the manuscripts I sent out today, I said, when you have time, I'd love, because I do value, I think that's the other thing, is finding people that you truly value what they're going to say. So I think you want to do that then for someone else, because they're helping you and it's this really beautiful back and forth.
really amazing. When I came to the US, which I think from memory now, I don't know, when did everything go bananas shaped in the world? I was definitely, well, it was before that, 2015 or 16. Anyways, that's irrelevant, actually. Maybe I'm remembering just more for my own sake. But when I came there for I was doing a retreat, and I had written Lolly and the Lollipop and the Meditation Adventures, which was my very first series. And I'd show it to people here and they'd be like, oh, that's very nice. Well, I turned up at this retreat and someone asked and I showed them and they were like, wow, and what is this character doing? Blah, 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 check this out. Oh, such and such, check this out. Oh, did you? And I'm like, what's going on? No one does that in my country. So I actually found that the US, this was just my personal experience, had this kind of lift you up energy where they want to help you and lift you up. And another friend of mine who's a speaker said that when he gives speeches here in Australia, when he gets off, everyone says, wow, well done, you're amazing, you know, you're doing so well. And then they walk off because they think you're doing so well. But when he does speeches in the US, they go, wow, you're amazing, you did so well, I need to introduce you to someone, there's someone you need to meet. So there's this kind of energy of really helping and expanding and growing, which I'm jealous. That's why I said that story. I think you guys do it the best.
I love that. I love it. And I think too, you know, and I'll speak just as women. When you have women that do not do that and they want to one up, well, oh, that's nice that you did that, but I did this. It's such an ugly character trait. You know, that's great. I want to celebrate you. You can celebrate me. And then I think, again, you're circling back to that honest feedback. You know, you don't have to be like the total cheerleader all the time because that's exhausting too. And it sometimes becomes unauthentic. But when you're really wanting to see someone succeed and you're really saying, you know what, I need to introduce you to this person who owns this bookstore, or this person that you would be great on their podcast, because all of those things are so daunting. But when you have that is authentic, oh, it's so good. It's so good.
Yeah. And that's it. I think you nailed it. It's look for that authentic place, that authentic group where you fit. And, you know, we're so lucky that we live in a global world now. So, you know, like in Australia, nobody knows my books. Nobody knows me at all. And when I say to, you know, fellow authors here, I actually write kind of for the American market. It just suits me, my personality and my style. And then my editor, of course, corrects a lot of my Australian kind of, you know, humor and turns it more US style. So that's just, I don't know, I resonate to that. So find where you resonate and likewise find that group that you resonate to. And maybe I'm definitely saying this for my own advice. Keep looking until you find that group, but don't not look, because I haven't looked.
I'm going to invite you to our group, okay? That's what's going to happen. I'm going to let you see the magic that is our group. Okay, so you got to get a little vulnerable and a little uncomfortable to try. But then if it doesn't work, you can walk away. It's not set in stone. So I think that's the other piece of it, that if something just like, oh, this one wasn't for me, because we all have that. We all have, you know, dinners we've gone to, or, you know, I've set up play dates for my kids, or things we're like, yeah, that one, we're not doing that again. Or that was lovely and let's repeat. So just being vulnerable is really hard. And then understanding like it's not forever and it might not be for everybody, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's really, really solid advice. And I did a Mind Valley course. For anybody who doesn't know Mind Valley, I'm giving them a free plug. Mind Valley has like sort of amazing courses in personal growth and mindset stuff. And it's terrible that I don't remember the teacher's name, but she said one of the advice was to have a way that you give feedback, and likewise to train other people to give feedback to you that way. So don't expect that they just do, because they, for example, didn't do a course, or, you know, they're still coming from a good place. But she says you always give two things you loved or that were great, and then one thing that they could adjust, make different. And she don't even think she even said make better. She just says, you know, in your opinion. Or you give three things that you really liked and two things that they could adjust or make different. And that's really changed my mind frame. Now, not only can I give feedback that way, but now I can actually train other people. Actually, this is how I like to get that feedback so that I don't get hurt, for example, in the same way if you said, oh, that character stinks, take them out, you know, like, I don't like them, they're horrible, and they're like the main character, you know.
Right. And I think, too, an education is the compliment sandwich. So you start with the compliment, that meat or cheese in the middle is something like, oh, it could be better, and then you end with that compliment because then someone's more receptive. And I think, too, when you're looking for that feedback, and again, changing it to feedback, someone has to listen very carefully or read very carefully to look for the things that they could improve on. But also, they have to find the things that you're doing well. So if you have that shift, like someone took the time to find the thing that they love, so then you're more like, oh, yeah, you were listening because I love that part, too. Oh, but you're right. I could make that stronger. Or you're right. That doesn't make sense. I don't know. There's just this thing that I think our brain does of being more receptive because someone had to almost work harder to find that thing that they did enjoy.
Gosh, I wish I could go to school as a kid in the US again. Sounds amazing over there. I'm sure they do things like that at school here too, but I probably just haven't paid attention. Just it's that positivity and that growth mindset that I'm really attracted to, like a mosquito to a light. I think it's just, why would you not live your life that way? You, of course, come with those values and that mindset yourself. Hence, there's a new saying in town. They used to say you attract what you want, write yourself the $1 million check, all that sort of stuff. But actually, the new word on the street is you attract what you are. You attract what you are. Be what you want to attract, not just want it. So you have to walk the talk, you know. That's a little bit of an adjustment shift, and I feel like you are that, hence you've attracted a good writing group.
Well, thank you.
So what's the plan for you with your books and your writing career? Like, are you sticking with picture books? Where are you going? Tell us your plan.
I truly believe picture books is where I meant to be right now. I had a fifth grader at school ask me, so Mrs. Dankert, when are you going to up your game and write a novel? And I thought, oh, buddy, I said, well, thank you. I just don't see that right now. But, you know, to especially young adults, they're like, I want to see a thick book. You know, what did you write? I love picture books so much. It's such a passion. As a mom, as a elementary teacher, it's just, I can read so many and talk about so many things that with my own children and with students that I think right now, I have about 5 other manuscripts that are in rough shape, but they are getting better slowly but surely.
That's exciting. Kids don't realize, just like adults, I think, don't realize, they think picture books are the easy ones to write. And actually, picture books are the hardest of all, I think.
You can't hide it. You have to say what you want in the shorter amount of words. And like you said, there's rules that you have to follow or you choose to break some of them. Yeah, you have to make it all count because one of your target audience, those kids, that attention span is a lot shorter.
Is the plan to one day retire yourself from teaching and just live on a Greek island writing picture books? Is that where we're going with this? I mean, I'll be at the island next door, so, you know, we can visit and still connected to our writers' groups.
I love it. I love it. This sounds like a book in itself. You know, retire from teaching, Greek island writing. I like it. With a little frappe, I love it. I love teaching. I kind of made a promise to my husband before I graduated from college where he said, you know, I know you're going into education. He said, please don't be one of those teachers that hate their job, that they should have retired. And so kind of that promise has been, as long as I love it, I'll keep doing it. I don't know in Australia, but the teacher plates in the US are heaping with demands and asks and it is harder from, you know, this is my 12th year teaching, and from when I started to now it's different. However, I can kind of keep, can kind of compartmentalize that because I still love what I do. It still excites me to come to work. It still excites me to see those light bulb moments with the kids. However, that fizzles. It would be really hard to stay. So I hope that I can continue kind of this balance of the author and the educator, because for right now it works. Right now it's really fun and exciting. But you know, the Greek island doesn't sound too bad either. So
you could teach there. You know, they always need to learn English. They love people who teach them English. And they all watch US TV over there, so they all learn English with an American accent, which is fantastic.
Perfect.
That could be a thing. But yeah, it's beautiful that, you know, as you say, you love to teach still. And yeah, I do think it's harder everywhere. I think the plates of teachers are the demands, the judgment they cop. I mean, gosh, we just think that they should be like superhuman psychologist teachers, you know, like all around everything. And then, of course, you have to deal with parents and the people, you know, who are running the institution of your school. It's a lot. So you guys are incredible, absolutely incredible, because without you, we'd have to keep our children home forever. And we all know what that was like during those
years. We tried that. Right.
A bunch of people loved it and stayed that way. Hats off to those people. Amazing home educators. Incredible. I liked sending my kids to school. I've only got 2 more years left now, and then I've got no more school children.
Yay! Oh, my gosh. Wow.
It's magnificent that, as you say, you wait to see if that light ever turns off, and hopefully it never does. But if it does, you have, you know, writing, which is fantastic. Thank you so much for being on my little podcast today.
Thank you for having me. It was great. Just great.
You really do emanate that energy of kindness. Go check out Christina's book, The Kindness Machine. All the links will be in the show notes, and we can't wait to see what you write next.
Thank you, Eleanor, so much.
And do send me that link to join your writers group.
I will.
Not anybody else. You go look for your own people, but I now have one, so that's the bonus of being the podcaster.
That's right.
Thanks again, Christina. Did you find that interview valuable? Great! Now be an awesome human and go and leave a review, because it helps the podcast out so much. Want to read the show notes? Check out thechildrensbookauthorpodcast.com. Want to find out more about me, Eleanor Page? Find me at eleanorpage.com or come and say hello on social at Eleanor Page Books. Until next time, keep writing and keep learning.